Donald Trump is set to take office in a situation unlike any other president in modern history. Trump has business holdings and active business relationships in at least 20 countries, likely many more. And that means that his financial fortunes rest with countries where the United States has national security interests, with politicians who can control his deals or curry favor with investors, and with business partners who, in many cases, are agents of those very governments. Now, Donald Trump told the New York Times that the law is on his side here. The president can't have a conflict of interest. Well, while he's right that in most cases government ethics rules don't apply to the president, aside from some big exceptions in the Constitution, in fact, anyone can have a conflict of interest. That's when your interests conflict, whether you get in legal trouble for them or not. And a new sweeping report out from the New York Times details a lot of what can be known about Donald Trump's financial interests around the world and how they could affect the U.S. national interest. Eric Lipton is a Washington-based investigative reporter with our partner, the New York Times. He's been spending a lot of time covering the president-elect's business interests and potential conflicts of interest. He's a co-author of that broad piece, along with several other reporters.
The thing that's sort of interesting about the role that Donald Trump is going to play in the United States is that we're a country that for the last several decades has really been pushing other governments around the world to separate political power from economic power. We have something called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which is trying to, you know, create more transparency in governments. It's trying to prevent any payments for permits or other or payments for contracts. And we've been preaching that, you know, you really need to have a transparent government. And where the people, you don't want to have the government of the oligarchs, where people have both political power and economic power. And now, I'm not at all suggesting that Donald Trump is an oligarch, but there is a centralization of economic and political power that he represents, which is going to sort of undermine a lot of the former State Department people we spoke with. The argument that the United States is making is that there needs to be a division, and that one, you know, the people in control of the government should also not be in control of major chunks of the economy.
So you go all over the world in this piece. You mentioned Brazil, you mentioned India, Azerbaijan, a bunch of different places. But let's just take one case, the Philippines, where the Philippine envoy to the United States happens to be Trump's business partner on buildings that he's building there. He flew to Trump Tower after the election for meetings with the Trump children, which we were all told was a business, not a diplomatic trip. And yet they're still planning to do more business together in the future.
Right. It's really sort of a head-spinning arrangement. I mean, to think that the guy that runs the Trump brand in the Philippines, where he just has completed the Trump Tower outside of Manila. And at the same time that that guy is the envoy to the United States from the Philippines, there's great tensions between the United States and the Philippines right now. And then you have a guy who's a business partner with the envoy to the United States in the Philippines. That same envoy to the United States, who is his business partner, has also made clear that he's pursuing other deals with the Trump organization. So they're going to be, you know, having further arrangements that even further complicate the relationship.
So let's drill down on that just a little bit. I mean, what's the bigger risk here, that the president of the United States may have a fundamental conflict of interest between his own personal business interests and the interests of the United States, or that these deals could simply distort relations between the United States and important countries like the Philippines or Turkey or UAE or India or Brazil?
The biggest risk to me is that the government of the Philippines will expedite the permit on the next tower that Donald Trump organization or the Trump organization wants to build in the Philippines, because it thinks that if it does that, it would somehow get a better deal from the White House, and that therefore the White House won't, you know, criticize its human rights record, or that it will provide more military assistance simply because it's doing extra favors for the Trump organization. And there's no way that Donald Trump can really stop that. I mean, and he didn't necessarily request it. And he's not doing anything himself or his family that is inappropriate, but he's receiving a benefit that seems inappropriate because of the position of power he has. You know, say he's got a golf course with memberships that cost $50,000. Why wouldn't a government in some country that wants to impress the Trump family and, you know, buy up a bunch of memberships, or say he's got a hotel in a city in Washington where, you know, the diplomats, they'll pick his hotel because they want to say, even if he doesn't know about it, they want to send the signal that we like you, Mr. Trump, and we want your help to benefit our own agenda here in Washington.
And it should be said, Eric Lipton, I mean, as broad as your piece is, you've done them based on reporting and financial disclosures and just the fact that photographers can go up and take pictures of Trump Towers in a place like the Philippines. You don't know where the banks are that have lent money to Donald Trump, who he owes money to, and who the Trump Organization owes money to.
No, we know of engagements in at least 20 countries and with dozens of different deals. And it is not the whole list. In particular, he has not specified all of his lenders. And I mean, if you want to talk about someone that has leverage over you, to some extent, you know, a project that you built and that has your name on it and you got paid perhaps a fee or a commission to have your name on it is one thing. But if you owe someone $50 million, $100 million, you know, they have more leverage over you than someone you simply have a branding arrangement with. And we don't know who most of those loans are with, because he did not disclose them, and he's not required. He's required to disclose assets, and he did that in Federal Election Commission disclosure. He's going to have to do another disclosure in May of 2018, although the Obama administration, when they came in, they did it the first year of their tenure in office, and he can choose whether or not he wants to do that.
So Donald Trump said in his sit down with the New York Times, he could easily run both his business and the country, but he's not going to do that. He's not going to be signing the checks anymore while he's president, hand that off to his children. But does that action dissolve the conflict of interest? I mean, he'll still know where his deals are. He'll know where his buildings are, and he'll still be talking to his children on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's definitely problematic. It's not a blind trust. And even if it were a blind trust because it's real estate, it doesn't really have the net effect of separating him from the potential conflict. So, I mean, you've had now, you know, the Wall Street Journal and others in the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal has called for him to take the radical step, which he presumably would never agree to, of actually liquidating all of his family holdings, taking the cash and then having someone invest that money that he doesn't have any insight into where that money is being invested. That would be a true blind trust. And then he could be president and no one could criticize him because he would not know what actions he's taking, what benefit it was bringing to any of his companies. But the way it's set up now is almost he might as well just run it himself. I mean, his children, his daughter has participated in, we know, at least three conversations with world leaders in Argentina, in Turkey, and in Japan. His sons are continuing to meet with business partners in various parts of the world. And his sons and daughters are on the transition team, and they're talking about having his son-in-law perhaps play an informal role in the administration. So the family and the business and the government continue to be entwined, even if Donald Trump is not signing the checks for the Trump Organization.
Eric, you know, before I let you go, there is a ton of criticism of the media, newspapers, cable outlets, radio shows after this election, a lot of it deserved, about the way the media handled the Trump phenomenon. And since your piece came out, a lot of people on television and even more of them on Twitter are saying to you and to your co-reporters, great piece, where the heck was this before the election? Why are you doing it now when the guy has his hands around the White House? How do you respond to that?
The short answer is yes, we could have done more. We should have done more. And, you know, there's always more that can be done. And I mean, but there's also a limit to the number of people and you know, the amount of time. And I wish we had done more and on both Hillary and on Donald Trump. But we did a lot of great stuff.
Eric Lipton is a Washington-based investigative reporter with our partner, The New York Times, who covered this story along with several other reporters. You can read that piece on NewYorkTimes.com.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.